Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
It is time for our parenting slot, as you heard there. We're joined once again by Coleman. Dr. Coleman, good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. My 9-year-old daughter was browsing gymnastics videos on YouTube when other inappropriate porn videos came up. She was on an unmonitored device, and I blame myself for not keeping it more out of her reach. I'm normally technically savvy enough to protect my kids' devices, but this one failed me. Anyway, we had a long talk. I told her she wasn't in trouble and that the people were having sex and there was nothing wrong with it. That it wasn't exactly how it was in the movies and that I wasn't angry with her, but it was inappropriate at her age to be watching these, and that's why they're rated 18. Yesterday, my husband discovered she hid another device in her room and was accessing porn again this week. I told her I was angry because she was told not to look at them again, and if she came across them, to let me know. I asked her why she wanted to look at the videos. Was she nosy? Was she confused? Would she like me to explain sex? Did she find it interesting? Etc. Her answer was that she didn't know, that she was just addicted to watching them, but didn't know why. She doesn't want to talk about it, etc. I don't know what to do next. Do I have the full sex talk with her? We've learned our lesson. We have taken her own iPod from her. We've hidden our devices. I'm devastated that she's been exposed to this at such a young age.
Yeah, one of the contemporary challenges, unfortunately. And I mean, again, this speaks to the debate of, you know, people would say, you know, well, my child wouldn't go looking for pornography, but sometimes pornography finds your child, and that's why it's important to have these conversations. I mean, 9 is very young, and you know, but this is not the first time I've heard this. There's really been a few occasions where pre-pubertal children who come across this accidentally feel compelled to rewatch and rewatch, and we don't really understand why that is. Is it a measure of their confusion? Are they trying to resolve something? It's not a physiological kind of sexual arousal as such in that sense, but there's something intriguing in these images that make children go back to do it. And you know, this is about the fifth or sixth time I've heard of a child under 10 who has been told to not watch pornography anymore and has gone ahead and done it. And again, we're not really sure what they're seeking in this, but we do know that they do feel compelled to watch it again. And my guess is it's something about trying to clarify a confusion about the scene that they're watching, or an intriguedness. It seems a bit excessive to say it's something that they're not allowed to do, so that kind of adds the mystique that they want to do it. There's something in the act of watching that is serving some purpose for them, and we're not entirely sure why. But what we do know is that you need to protect your child from doing that and almost protect them from themselves. The idea of watching pornography as an adult is completely different to watching it as a child. As an adult, you know this is a fantasy and this is not how normal intimacy occurs, and so you can draw that line between fantasy and reality. A child does not know that, and a child who's watching pornography doesn't just see two people having sex, they see a relationship, and what they're doing is interpreting that as a blueprint for a relationship. And the worry is that if you can't separate the fantasy from reality, that that's what you believe intimacy to be, and that will develop fears around intimacy, or having maturity fears as you grow older, and almost being terrified at the prospect of that act. And we know that pornography plays with themes of consent, sexual violence, hostility. Those are the themes of pornography that children are watching, and the moral compass is grossly off track in that. In terms of, as an adult watching it, you know that watching it, but as a child you don't, and that's why we need to protect children from watching these images. As for the pre-pubertal child, we don't really know why they continue to watch it, but there is an element of intrigue that and most will say, I don't know. They won't be able to articulate what it is about it, those images, that make them want to go back and see it again.
What should she do then?
Again, she's done all the right things. She's had the conversation around, you know, that this isn't real life, and that there's a reason why it's over 18s, and there's a reason why you need to be at a certain level of maturity to be able to watch these movies and understand them, and has requested that she not do it again. I mean, her disappointment should be around the child's, if you could use the word, deceit, that she said she wouldn't and did it. So that's really what you're sanctioning. If the child doesn't have the words to describe what is drawing her to it, then you're really limited to how much you can I suppose, or have a conversation about what meaning it has for her. Mm. But at the moment, I just think she needs to limit her from accessing that material. And it sounds like, as she says, we've learned our lesson. I think she's a bit hard on herself. I mean, it's really hard to surveil this stuff in terms of for parents. The handheld device is a game changer. I mean, we can't just leave the PC in the sitting room and keep an eye anymore. It's a completely different object, and oftentimes it's a futile experience to try and limit it. But in this case, she needs to protect the child as much as possible. These images, and the more she watches them, the more confused she's going to get. And maybe when she's a little bit older, she might be able to articulate a conversation about her concerns about it. But at 9, I still think that's... I don't know whether she would have a cognitive awareness of the
understanding to know what it is. Yeah. My daughter is 13 and has seen me go through alopecia over the last 2 years. I've since regained the majority of my hair, but she's now terrified that the same will happen to her. I catch her intently examining her hair in the mirror, and I often find her obsessively brushing it. She is open about her fears and occasionally cries about the prospect. I can't openly say it will never happen to her, because realistically, it might. I do, however, tell her not to worry about it, and she should be fine. None of this offers her little solace, really. What should I say?
Yeah, this is really, again, another challenge. Any sort of kind of hereditary conditions, they affect a whole family system in terms of guilt and worry and concern. But essentially, what this girl is engaging in is rumination. So she's going back, and for her, the checking and the looking and brushing is almost, she believes it's allaying her anxiety the more she checks. But in actual fact, what it is doing is it's exacerbating her anxiety. It's making her worse.
Yeah.
So to kind of say, don't worry about it, or That's not going to reassure her more. It's actually going to probably make her more anxious. I'd present her with the facts. And as far as I'm aware, and I'm no expert, but I think a vast majority of alopecia sufferers don't pass it on to their children. So she needs to deal in facts rather than opinions. And this child is obviously going to be kind of vigilant to the negative outcome. As human nature, that's how we are. But it's trying to present her with the facts. But I'd say, and this is probably the case for most people who have an anxious child, you're trying to reprogram what is called negative automatic thoughts. So somebody who's anxious will automatically see threat in everything that they see. So they'll go to the worst case scenario. And what I'd say is there's a four-step way in which you can try and reprogram that for a child. The first one is demand the evidence. Is there evidence for this worry? And what is the evidence? And it's not, don't dealing in facts and opinions, just the facts. And the facts is there's a chance, but it's only a chance that she'll pick this up. The second thing is asking herself, how does this make you feel? And more than likely, it's going to make you feel stressed, worked out, worked up and wound up about it. And then ask yourself, what are you doing? Well, you're catastrophizing. You're unhelpfully thinking about it. And then ask yourself, could I do something different? And it's almost going through those four steps to try and reprogram the negative automatic attachment that we do when we have, and negative automatic thoughts can be kind of like black and white thinking. It's all good, it's all bad, or, judging the whole experience on one aspect of it. We all have tendencies to think unhelpfully. Just in this child's case, it's she's ruminating, which means she's going over and over and over and hoping for a different outcome. And in actual fact, that's really unhelpful. And it's trying to break the cycle of rumination and try and give her another way of coping, really.
One suggestion from a listener. I had alopecia, took my daughter to a scalp specialist to put some of her fears to bed. I have to say it helped her so much to understand it all. Mine was stress-induced and she should be fine. Give her the facts and that will help her more than you know.
Yeah, again, that's a more stringent way of providing facts. But yeah, if you wanted to go to that extent and felt that the objective voice of reason would manage that for her, well, then maybe that's a good idea.
Yeah, and somebody else texts in to say, my daughters have seen me go through this too. I still wear my wig. My daughters know they can do the same and don't worry about it as much, sure, says Dervla.
And again, in taking the approach of if this happens, we'll manage it, is better than, trying to say, don't worry about it. It's almost more reassuring. This girl's 13. She's just engaging on teenagers. She has all the complexities of, how do I look? Am I pretty enough? Am I tall enough? Am I thin enough? And she has this extra worry that perhaps all of those worries are getting channeled through, the worry about that. And it's a tough time. It really is.
My 8-year-old is going through a hide-and-seek phase with our belongings. He's constantly hiding important things and not telling us where they are. For instance, he hid my passport, which I needed for work that morning. He refused to tell me where it was, and I eventually found, after what felt like hours of searching, at the top of the hot press, which he had climbed in order to hide it. He had hidden my husband's car keys, bills we need to pay, my purse on several occasions, all found in the most awkward and obscure places. We scold him and take away privilege, but he doesn't seem to care. It's all a game to him, but at 8, shouldn't he know better?
Yes, he should. Yes. I mean, he's 8, so he's knowing consequence. That's the actions of a much younger child.
Yeah.
I had one of those myself, kind of an 18-month-old who would take his brother's favourite spoon and hide it. And there was definitely an intent and strategy involved in that. But I think for an 8-year-old, there's something else going on rather than this being a hide-and-seek game. I mean, he's taking things that are really important and that he knows is causing this escalation in the parents' behaviour. It seems to me that he may be stuck in a phase of development around that kind of 2 to 3-year-old where your concentration is on your own autonomy and your own power, so you overexert it. So the 2-year-old who finds the word no will say it far too much,
yes,
and will take it too far. And in some ways, there's something about that he's kind of, he enjoys the sense of having control over others and is maybe that giving him a sense of mastery. But the fact that the scolding isn't having an effect suggests that this is more than a game to him. There's something in his parents' reaction that he may be gratified from. What I'd suggest to the parents is, and this is going to be difficult because if you're looking for your passport and you need to leave in 5 minutes, but it is to try and neutralize your reaction to what he's doing and try and address it in a kind of bite your lip calm way as much as possible, because if it is the reaction that he's seeking, the more kind of histrionic and hysterical you get, perhaps the more that's likely to continue. Again, I mean, we were smiling reading out that email, but I'm guessing if it was you who were looking for your car
not
keys,
that funny. It just strikes me that a lot of these things seem to be connected with leaving the house. He's preventing them from leaving the house by hiding these things. Might that be a factor?
Absolutely.
There?
I mean, again, if you want to go down the kind of notion of a kind of an attachment issue, that he will do what he can to hold their attention and hold their presence and proximity as well. If there is a pattern to that, well, then that certainly needs to be something that would be explored. But I felt that was a bit of a reach from my point of view. But you're absolutely right. There's layers of meaning to this other than it just being a game.
Yeah. I've got to say, he's very clever in his choice of hiding places, though you'd also be worried about the risks he's taking himself by
climbing up for a hot press.
And, you know,
he's obviously not risk averse in that way.
Yeah, indeed, yes. Might have a career as a climber later on. Right, we do have to take a commercial break. When we come back, there'll be a question about chastising children when you're separated.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.